4 or 5 years ago, it was my privilege to, well, for one thing, to be eating in the home of my mother and father. But guests in that home that night were a family, a man and his wife, whose name is the Halliburtons. And I want to introduce them to you this morning. They're not here. Mrs. Halliburton is deceased. Brother Halliburton is still living. But the memories that are associated around the name of Halliburton to me are very dear and are very elevating, because the memories have to do with service, love, unselfishness, kindness, gentleness, patience. You name all of these, and the name Halliburton comes to my mind, because you see, Brother and Sister Halliburton served and waited upon their invalid daughter, Anne, for 45 years. From the very cradle until her grave, they took care of her with the most tender and loving care that would surpass anything that you could almost imagine. I remember very well how her mother, Mrs. Hallie, we used to call her, how she would bathe her, how she would feed her, how she would wait on her every need, how she dressed her in the latest fashions, though she was totally invalid. She was completely spastic. She spent her time either in the bed or in a wheelchair. She couldn't speak. She couldn't do anything. Everything had to be done for her. But I'm telling you, she didn't know it. She thought she was just like the rest of people, the way her mother treated her. They'd take her for drives in the car and so many things like this that indicated the loving care that her mother and father had for her. You know, the existence of invalid people has always caused questions to arise. The cause of it, for one thing. What is the cause? The disciples asked Jesus one day, Lord, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind? That's John 9. And then Job's friends thought that they had it all worked out, and they said, Job, it's because you're a scoundrel. You've been sinning, and nobody's known it, but now it's caught up with you, and you're getting it right in the face, right where you deserve it, because you're a sinner. As far as the responsibility for caring for people who are invalid, that has always been a problem. How should we care for them? How should we treat them? I'll tell you one thing. The Roman government, the Roman Empire, the Roman society, they treated them by killing them at birth. When a child would be born afflicted, they would take it out on a hillside and let the elements and starvation or the wild beasts destroy it. Or they would just drown the child at birth, but they wouldn't allow it to live. But the question of burdens, the question of responsibilities, some responsibilities actually become burdens because of the nature of them, but they always have caused us to ask the question, why? And then if the burden becomes our burden, then we ask the question, why me, Lord? And sometimes we can't understand the reason. We don't understand the cause. And may I say that we may never understand the cause. But if you're observant, you will be able to understand and see the effect. But even more than being just observant, if you'll be wise, you'll not only be able to see the effect, you'll be able to determine the effect. Because all of these things that happen in life, your responsibilities, your burdens, they're going to either make you or break you. They'll either polish you or crush you. But they're going to have an effect on your life. Actually, there are three kinds of burdens. The kind of burden that we ourselves have to bear. And then secondly, there's a burden that other people can help us bear. And then thirdly, there's a burden that only God can bear. And these three burdens actually constitute the bulk of the burdens and the responsibilities that are on our shoulders today. So many times in facing unpleasant burdens and unpleasant responsibilities, we go through the whole gamut of saying, well, I just reject it, I renounce it, you know, that's not mine. Or else we go to the next step of perhaps becoming just objectionable, in the sense that we become rebellious. And then there's a process and a regular route through which people go who have to accept burdens of this nature, until finally they try to bargain with God, they try then other schemes and machinations and things to try to get out of the responsibility, but then finally have to accept it as being part of life. The first one of these, the Apostle Paul mentions in Galatians 6:5 when he says, every man must bear his own burden. Now, that just simply means that there are certain burdens that are yours because of life. That was the hand that was dealt you. That was what God has given you. That's just simply your lot in life. Now, the Halliburtons had such a case as that. Their daughter was their burden. She was their responsibility. She could not have been cared for by a home. She was cognizant. She was sensitive. She was intelligent. She was totally dependent. She was appreciative. Until you've heard Ann Halliburton squeal a squeal of appreciation, you've never really and truly heard joy expressed. And yet it was totally unintelligible. But you knew she had really gotten the point of the thing. Well, nobody else could have cared for her but her mother and father. That was their responsibility, and they accepted it for 45 years. There are many other examples that I could give. Burdens that you bear, responsibilities that you have to accept, and that I've had to accept. The very burden or the responsibility of life itself. You didn't ask to be born. You certainly didn't ask to be born like you are in every respect. There are things about you that you would change, but life itself was not your choice. It was the choice of your mother and daddy. And so here we are, every one of us, sitting inside a body with life as being our blessing or our curse or responsibility or burden, and none of us asked for it, none of us was responsible for it, and yet it's ours. And you may feel like Solomon, who said as he was thinking about life, he said, I reckon that those who are dead are better than those that are alive. And he said, better than both of these is the person that never has been born. That's in Ecclesiastes 4. And Job, sitting upon that pile of ashes in the dump heap, scratching himself and scraping himself with a piece of broken pottery, those sores bleeding and oozing and hurting, Job said, I curse the day that I was born. And he let it be known that he was not at all in favor of this miserable existence that he had inherited, quite completely apart from his own choice. He didn't want it, but it was his, just simply because life was his, without his choice or decision. Work is yours also. It's a responsibility that you've got. And nobody can do your work for you. You're going to have to do it yourself. You're going to have to write your term papers. You're going to have to do your own studying. You're going to have to work at your own job. You didn't ask to work. The very nature of work has been enhanced in the sense of its distastefulness many times because of not your actions, but because of something that Adam did, one of our far-off first ancestors. He sinned and God cursed the earth because of the sin of Adam. And ever since that day, you've been working harder because of what Adam did. And Paul says to the Thessalonians, if you won't work, you ought not to be allowed to eat. Now that's a responsibility then that you're going to have to accept. The responsibility of choosing whom you're going to serve is a responsibility that's yours. Not because you asked for it, it's just yours. Joshua said, choose today whom you're going to serve. You're going to have to make the same choice. It's not whether or not you'll serve somebody. You're going to serve somebody. You're either going to be the slave of Jehovah God, or you're going to be the slave of your own passions. But you're going to serve somebody. You're going to serve Satan or God, God or Mammon, one or the two. But it's your choice. It's not a choice as to whether you will serve, but the choice is who you'll serve or whom you'll serve. The choice of death is not really your choice. It was made by Adam. He chose to do something. God cursed man, and ever since then, people have been dying, not by choice. This is something that's been put into your lap and mine quite apart from my decision. I have been appointed to die. Hebrews 9:27 simply says, it is appointed unto man once to die, and then comes the judgment. And there's another thing that I don't have anything to do with, and that's the judgment. I really wish that we're not going to be. I really wish there was no death. I really wish there were not a thing. You know, if I had my human way, I didn't have anything to do with any of it. It was laid in my lap. Life itself was. Death is, the judgment is, work is, my decision to have to make a choice about whom I serve. All of this has been laid in your lap and mine, and I didn't have anything to do with it. How are you doing with those burdens that are yours? How are you bearing up under them? Are you doing all right? Those things that you're having to bear up under, your responsibilities, those things that you and you alone can handle and under which you must serve and bear up, how are you doing with them? Are they getting you down? Well, I'll tell you one thing. You might as well back up, get a good deep breath, and put your nose to the grindstone because, baby, they're yours. And nobody else under God's heaven is going to take them off of you. You've got them. Now, what are you doing with them? You've got several choices we're not going to mention today. You can either curse them or accept them. As one girl who was a graduate of this college has been out now for a year, but a year before she graduated, she came to the point that she began turning away from God. She went into agnosticism. She's headed toward atheism. She came to the conclusion and said to a friend of hers the other day, "I believe that life is just a bad joke that God told on one of his off days." Well, you can look at life like that if you want to, and you can go through life as miserable as you please. But I'll tell you one thing, it's still yours, and you're going to have to do something about it. Those burdens that are ours, that nobody else can bear but yourself. And you're just about as happy as you make up your mind to be, right? Right. You're just about as happy as you make up your mind to be. But then there are some burdens that other people can help us bear. And there's some burdens that you can help other people bear. Let me tell you about this. First of all, in Galatians 6:2, Paul says, "Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ." Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. There's a second chapter to this Halliburton story. The Halliburtons lived in Winchester, Tennessee. They lived there, I guess, I don't know, all their lives or all their adult lives. In about 1941, my family, my mother and father and all of the family, moved to Winchester, Tennessee. My dad preached there for the church. We moved right next door to the Halliburton family. I have a sister, an older sister, whose name is Betty. She was 12 years old about whenever we moved to Winchester. And all 12-year-old girls are precious. I don't care who they are or where they are. Something about 12-year-old girls that are just absolutely fantastic. Betty moved in with our family next door to Ann and the Halliburtons. And it wasn't but a day or two before Betty was over there to meet this new neighbor of hers and to meet this new friend. And there Ann was, completely immobile, totally dependent, sitting there, couldn't talk, could barely express whatever emotions she had, but there she was. And here these two little girls met. And don't you know, it was love at first sight. They just literally fell in love with each other at first sight. And Betty would come home every day after school. And she could hardly get her books down fast enough. She'd take off over there next door, and she would play for hours with this totally invalid little child. I don't think Betty ever thought of it as a burden. I believe she saw it as something that was just totally enjoyable to her. Though I suspect that there were times when other girls were out playing that maybe she wanted to go out. But she sacrificed that for this girl that had become such a good friend of hers. And there were things that Ann could say that her mother couldn't even understand, but Betty understood because they were just like that. And every day for some years, till Betty was in high school, they were there every day with each other, talking and sharing, and Betty was telling her things and dressing her and helping her and reading to her and all of that until they just became wrapped up in each other like that. Then we moved away. And that precious sister of mine began to write 2 letters a week to that girl. You know how long she wrote those 2 letters a week to Ann? She wrote her for 30 years. 30 years. That's 3,120 letters. You think about it. 30 long years, 2 letters every week without fail. That's what she did for her. I believe that's a beautiful example of someone bearing another person's burden that they weren't perhaps able to bear by themselves. Betty was a godsend to that family. I know Ms. Hallie must have thanked God many a time for this little 12-year-old girl who came over and became such a part of the family and lifted off of that mother some of the burden that maybe she couldn't bear by herself. Now, the mother and father had to take care of the child, but Betty could do these other things. She could write letters even after she left. And then 4 or 5 years ago, Ann died. Betty kept on writing those letters to her mother and father. How do you quit writing letters after you've been writing them for 30 years? 2 letters a week, what do you do with the time? I don't think you can break a habit like that. To me, that's a beautiful example of sharing and bearing other people's burdens. 3 or 4 Sundays ago, we took up a collection here for the Hobby family. Brother Benson let us know that this man had been burned in an accident, and there they were saddled with this tremendous expense of the hospital and then the trip here and the trip back to Africa. And this congregation here took up what has now become a contribution of about $10,000. They just asked for $5,000. But here we've gone another mile, and almost $10,000 has been collected. That's sharing other people's burdens. There's a movie coming to town next month entitled The Hiding Place. and you'll have to see it. It's the story of a family of believers in Jesus Christ who decided that they would help bear some of the burden of the Jewish nation. When the Nazis came into the Netherlands, they began to round up the Jewish people and put them in extermination camps. And then they began all of this effort to just completely wipe the Jew off the face of the earth. And this family of believers in Jesus began to take these Jews into their house and hide them. They built a wall, and they made sure that they could hide these people whenever the inspectors would come, until finally the government of the German people found out they were doing it, and they put all of this family of the Ten Boom family in prison, put them in prison camps. And I think all but one of them, Corrie Ten Boom, all but Corrie, died in the prison camps of the German occupation forces. And Corrie has now lived to tell her story, and it's in this film called The Hiding Place, and you'll want to see it. But it's all about people bearing the burdens of other people. It's beautiful. You remember when Mary washed, or rather anointed, the head of Jesus? You remember how she broke this alabaster cruse of ointment and it anointed his head? And it says, John records it, that the smell of that stuff filled the whole house. Well, Jesus said she has done what she could. You see, she couldn't die for Jesus. That was his burden. That was his responsibility. But she could anoint him with oil and prepare his body for burial. And it lightened his burden. I can't help but believe that it was a lifting of the burden somewhat to know that someone else shared with him in this dark hour. And then you can just name 1,001 ways that we can identify with people in their hours of trouble, in their hours of poverty, in their hours of sadness and death and sickness and old age. Any number of ways that we can do this by identifying with them and sharing that burden. I can't be old for you, but by the grace of God, I can learn to help you share your old age and share some of the burden of it. There's a family here in town, the David Schoenberg family. They have a child that's been an invalid for 17 years, and 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the father and mother nurse and care for that son. I'll have to confess, I don't have that kind of care in me yet. But it's made them. It didn't break them. It's made them better people. Burdens that only you can bear. Burdens that other people can help you bear. Jesus talked about this. This is his way of life. If the other way of life, the burdens that only you can bear, if that's the law of life, and that is the law of life, this law of bearing each other's burden, that's the law of Christ. For you see, Jesus, it says, bore our burdens. He carried our sorrows. That's what Isaiah said about the coming Messiah. And then when you see the life of Jesus, you see, sure enough, by the way, that's exactly the way he did live his life. Peter says that he himself bore in his body our sins upon the tree. He did that. It belonged to me. But he took that I couldn't bear, and he took it upon himself and said, I'll take care of it. I'll bear it for you. Oh, it's beautiful. This is the law of Christ. And that's what Paul meant when he said, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Well, there are many ways that we can do that sort of thing, but then there's a final burden, and that's the burdens that only the Lord can bear. Cast your burdens on the Lord. He'll sustain you. He'll not suffer the righteous to be moved. That's Psalms 55 and verse 22. Cast your burdens on the Lord. He will sustain you. The Lord will not allow his righteous to be moved. The Halliburtons, when we ate with them 4 or 5 years ago, they were in poor health. Anne had already died, and there they were in poor health themselves, crippled with arthritis. But they had driven a long way just to be in my mother and father's home and to go out and support a meeting that I was preaching in. They came all that way to go to that meeting. But that wasn't unusual for them. They had had that kind of faith all their life. They had demonstrated that kind of faith, and it was surely that kind of faith that bore them up in those times of trial. Let me ask you something. Over a 45-year period, do you reckon that they ever reached their extremity? You reckon there was ever a night when they were up at 2 o'clock waiting on this girl that they didn't break down in tears and say, I don't think I can go any further? I imagine there were plenty of times like that. And it was only their faith in God that brought them through. Cast all your burdens on the Lord. He'll care for you. Someone said that man's extremity is God's opportunity. How true that is. Man's extremity is God's opportunity. When you've gone as far as you think you can go, then the Lord, he'll do. He'll care for you. Paul had a thorn in his flesh. I don't know what it was, but he wanted to get rid of it. It was hindering his work. He asked the Lord one time, Lord, take it away. And he said, no. He went back and tugged at his sleeve and said, Lord, please get this thing off of me, please. And the Lord said, no. And then he went back a third time, he says, and he pestered him. He doesn't use the word pester, but I get the impression that that's what he did. And he said, Lord, please take this away from me. And the Lord said, Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. My grace is sufficient. My power is made perfect in weakness. So Paul accepted it and was given then the strength to bear up under those burdens, be the kind of man he ought to be. In 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, there's a statement there, casting all your anxieties upon him because he cares for you. You know what that verse means? I used to think that it meant cast all your anxieties upon him because God takes care of you. And that's what it means, but that's not all that it means. I was translating it one day and I found a whole new reservoir of meaning that I wasn't even aware of. It doesn't just mean that he takes care of you. The word means that he cares about you. Oh, and I was so stunned when I found out that, oh me, that's what it says. Not that he just takes care of you, but that he cares about you. When I found that out, my heart jumped figuratively into my throat. What a revelation. And what a joy to know that the God that created me cares about me, not just takes care of me. And what a difference there is in those two things. You see, Anne's mother and father, they cared for her. They fed her, they clothed her, they bathed her. That's caring for her. But Anne knew more than that. She knew that they not only cared for her, she knew they cared about her. They communicated that by the nature of their care for her. They cared about her. Many times we don't do that. Many times we communicate to people here, I'm taking care of you, but I don't care anything about you. I think many times the church takes care of people who are transients or takes care of people who are down and out, who need money, who need rent, who need food, who need maybe doctor's attentions, who need a lot of things. I think maybe many times we communicate, well, here, take this, you're no count anyway, and we have in effect told them we're caring for you but not caring about you. And don't think that they don't know what you're saying. I've seen, I think, church officials in the past do that very thing in giving money. They almost give it with a grudge and let the people go away with this distinct impression, all right, we're going to care for you, but we really don't care anything about you. I'll tell you, brethren, that's precisely what Paul meant when he said if we have so much of our energy that we give everything to feed the poor and even give our bodies to be burned, but we don't have love, it doesn't profit anything. He's saying there, if you do all that you do and all you've done is care for people and not let them know that you care about them, then you really haven't done anything. But Anne had been cared for, but she had been cared about. And there's a great deal of difference in the two. Burdens that only you can bear. How are you bearing up under them? Are you responsible? Or are you just flaking out and being irresponsible? Well, I'll tell you, nobody else is going to bear them for you. You're going to have to do that yourself. You might as well get on the stick and do it. But then there's some burdens that you can help others bear that they can't bear alone. And there's some burdens that you have that somebody's going to have to help you with. Are you able to do that? And then those that you have to cast on the Lord, can you do that? I was traveling with my wife and three sons in 1970 from Haifa, Israel, over to Athens, Greece, by boat. And it took about a three-day trip to make it across the Mediterranean. And while on that ship, I came across and became acquainted with a Greek Orthodox priest. He was a very nice man. He spoke English fluently. And I seized on him and made available or took advantage of the opportunity to ask him some words in the Greek language. I said, give me your feeling about these words. Fill me in on it. Tell me, what do they mean? And I asked him a whole list of words. And one of the words that I asked him about was a word that I had become fascinated with through the years. It's the word kolpon. Kolpon. It means breast or bosom or cradle. It means it's a very warm, a genuine expression of care. And it's strange. It's a strange word. And I said, tell me, what does the word kolpon mean? How does it come through in your thinking? I want you to color it for me or give me your thinking on it. He said, kolpon, oh yes. And he took a map down, and to my surprise and joy, he began to point out on the coastline of Greece all these little harbors, and every one of them had kolpon written across it. Kolpon this, and kolpon that, and kolpon that. And then it all of a sudden hit me, oh, there it is, there it is. It's a harbor. It's a cove. It's away from the struggles and trials of the world. That's what a kolpon is. That's what it's all about. It's a place where ships come in to unladen and unload their burden. You know, I got to thinking that that's what the church really is all about. We're supposed to be a coal pond. We're supposed to be a place that's a harbor out of the storms of life, where we come in with our burdens, you see, and we unload them on the Lord, things that we can't bear, our sins, our guilt, we can't bear that. So he said, I'll carry that for you. So we unload that burden, and then we take on some other loads that other people can't bear fully, but we can help them bear. And then we let them have some of the burdens that we just kind of get in there and change around to where everybody seems to find their level of bearing up under the burdens that we all have to share. That's what the church is about. Brethren, how we need to recommit ourselves to that perfect standard. That's what Christ intends the church to be. Are we that? Are we really and truly that kind of a place? Are we that kind of a people? Are we a colony of caring people to the point that we're willing to share one another's burdens? I'll take some of yours. I'll let you have some of mine. Let's all carry our burden to the Lord and all of these things, and then we'll stand up under our own burdens that we have to bear ourselves. Are we that kind of a people? Oh, we need to be. Because, you see, we're following a man who said, and his call to the world was this: come to me, all ye that labor and are heavily burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. That's who we follow. This man who was a burden bearer, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. That's what Christianity is all about. Are we doing that kind of burden bearing? May I urge us to rededicate ourselves to it. We need to recommit ourselves to that one who came to bear the burdens of humanity. Today, you may wish to do that very thing. At the early service, several responded. One responded to put on the burden of the Lord. She came to give him her burden, her guilt, and her sins. She came and he took those. And in so doing, she then put his burden upon her back, the cross of death, to where she died to the old person and buried him, and then came up out of the watery grave bearing the burden of Christ. But it's an easy burden. It's not hard. And perhaps then she's gone out bearing other people's burdens. It's so beautiful. We urge you. What is your need today? You may have a burden you want us to share with you. Come on. Don't you wait any longer. Let us help you with it. There's some things you'd have to do for yourself that we can't do for you. But there are some things that we can share with you. And there's some things that we need to share with you so that you can help us. Where are you today? How are you bearing up under your burdens? How are you helping others bear theirs? How are you trusting in the Lord to bear what you can't bear? May God bless you. Think and be sensitive to other people. Let's not become insensitive. May God bless us. Let's encourage each other while we stand and sing together, and you come if you need to.